necessarily those of IR and its advertisers or affiliates. The views expressed are not necessarily those of IR and its advertisers or affiliates.
Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality was usually scoffed at. Illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, the views of our guest. And this evening, our guest is Bob Chapman. And Bob is the editor of the International Forecaster and one of the few people I know who's been at this game longer than I have. How are you doing tonight, Bob?
Well, pretty good. No complaints.
All right, fine. Well, certainly it was amazing to see the market down strongly yesterday, and then this morning, when I finished my morning program, the market was off 191.95, and then suddenly, miraculously, almost as if it was being manipulated, it seems to have come back this afternoon.
Well, the manipulation began illegally in October of 1987. It was legalized through executive order, which created the working group in financial markets, and they dodged in and out of the markets several times during the late 80s and into the beginning of the 90s. But in the last 10 years, they've been extremely active, and that's 24/7, and in all markets, they... the central banks, including the Fed, as well as the U.S. Treasury, and they've gotten so in the last few years that they really don't care who knows what they're doing. And so they are acting arrogantly. And we saw on August 1st, the market started to move up around 3:20. The market closes at 4 Eastern time. And nothing to write home about, but boy, I'll tell you, they laid it on in the last 10 minutes, and the market was up almost 300 points. Those things just don't happen.
Now, was that today you're speaking of?
No, August 1st.
All right, fine.
And so they've been, every time the market gets down through normal selling, they come in and take it back up again. And as you saw, we've had a crisis, and this crisis that we're having right now is worse than the one we had in 1987. And in 1987, the market dropped 20% in one day. And we're going to see a lot more than that. We're going to see 20 and then some more after that. Because this is the resumption of the bear market that began in 2000. That was never allowed to play itself out because of the intercession into markets by the Fed and the U.S. Treasury and others. And what's happening is that in the collateralized debt obligation market, which are bonds which are consist of mortgages, 80% A and AA and AAA, and 20% junk, and that junk has caused innumerable problems because we're having a lot of failures. People are having their mortgages foreclosed, so it has dropped the value of these securities, of which there's essentially no market. It's a negotiated market, actually. There's no bid or ask. You have to go to somebody and ask them if they'd like to buy them. They usually are the professionals. And so what they've done is mark the value of these securities to the market by using a computer, not the real market. And so what's happened is they have given these bonds, these mortgage bonds, if you may, a new value.
Hold on, we'll be right back.
Sure.
All right, Bob, you're saying they're revaluing these CDOs, these collateralized debt obligations, and so they're giving them a new value, what, maybe 60 cents on the dollar, 70 cents on the dollar?
Well, some of them are 60, but most of them are 35 to 40.
All right, fine. So basically then, you're finding a lot of your banks and your hedge funds and other people are holding these bonds that are not worth anywhere near what they'd paid for them, and so they're going to lose a lot of money. And is that what happened over in France with that large French bank that suddenly closed its doors yesterday?
Yes, it is. And, you know, you have a lot of pension funds, and also central banks will hold it as well. And that's spread all over the world. And there's about $2 trillion worth. And I believe that half of them will end up going under. And so that's $1 trillion. And they have a recession going on, and we're seeing a lot of problems, which is reflected by Countrywide in the last couple of days. A better quality mortgage is going because people are losing their jobs to offshoring and outsourcing as a result of free trade and globalization. And so that's going to get mixed in here. Plus, we have a recession going on. So in order to offset the money that is no longer available in home equity because home prices are going down and lenders don't want to cash out loans anymore, nor do they want to write seconds, nor do they want to give equity loans on houses. They're being very judicious about it. And so that source of money, which is $600 or $700 billion a year, has dropped down to $100 or $200 billion, and will probably drop down to next to nothing.
Well, no, but Chris, but Bob, just yesterday, why the Fed, put out $24 billion. The European Central Bank put out $130 billion, just poured it out into the economy to try to stimulate the economy to keep it from collapsing.
Well, that's true, and that figure if you combine what the Federal Reserve put into the markets and the European Central Bank, that money went to banks, and the banks were told to lend to those who wanted to speculate in the stock market, and also those who wanted to shore up their balance sheets because they owned CDOs.
Hold that thought right there.
Another thing called an ABS.
All right, fine. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Bob is just saying that this money that was pumped into the economy yesterday by the Federal Reserve, our central bank, and by the European Central Bank, was actually given to banks, and the banks were told, lend that money out to anybody who wants to speculate in the market. And what are these ABSs you speak of?
Well, those are also another form of mortgage bond. Asset-backed securities. They can be loans on motorcycles or automobiles or furniture, whatever. And they're getting banged around as are junk bonds. But what I was trying to get to here is that the banks can lend 8 times the money that's taken in from the Fed and from the European Central Bank. So if you put it all together and you multiply times 8, what was given out in the last week to banks in Europe and the United States and elsewhere was about $1.7 trillion to play with. Now, that's a colossal sum, and that's what they're working at with. And at the same time, you saw today that the Working Group of Financial Markets, better known as the Plunge Protection Team, went in the market and kept it from essentially going down. And they will continue to do that until they think that the market's not going to go down precipitously anymore. And then they'll ease off. The result of all this is a total lack of confidence in the rating system for bonds and for stocks. And there's no confidence left in the real estate market. So the biggest market in the world besides currencies is the bond market. And so you have a misplaced trust now that doesn't exist anymore in all of these markets. And people are pulling their money up, particularly professionals, institutions, etc. And they're exiting the markets. And when they do that, it makes the job of the insiders to keep the markets from going lower very, very difficult. And so no matter what they do in here, the confidence is gone. The markets are going lower. And we will continually have this crisis in the bond market, or the debt market, you might call it that. And one of the results of pumping the availability of $1.7 trillion into these markets, the result is hyperinflation. This is the same kind of thing that happened in the early 20s in Germany for different reasons, but they're doing the same thing. And all around the major banks, there's 20 of them, they have increased the amount of money in credit by about 14% for the last year, and before that it was over 10%.
Well, now, do you think that then that will eventually, with another year or two, amount to 14% inflation? Or would it be closer to 10% inflation?
Well, inflation right now is 11% in the United States.
Right.
My guess is that they will increase the aggregates to 20%, and the only thing you can deduct from that is, I always have a hard time remembering this. Increases in productivity. And so we're going to see inflation a year from now over 15%.
They're not going to admit to it. But that's totally destructive. I can remember 1971 when, of course, the inflation rate hit 5%, why Nixon closed the gold window temporarily, took the world off the gold standard, and it put in wage and price controls because he said that a 5% inflation rate would destroy our economy.
Yeah, that's true, and inflation was 13.5% in 1980 officially.
Right.
And at that time they didn't Mickey Mouse the figures. And the figures, of course, today are all lies from the government. You have to go by private figures like we have in the International Forecaster. And incidentally, our Federal Reserve doesn't print those M3 figures anymore. We have to go and find them. And there's only a few publications that do it. And so, consequently, we are going to have one heck of a lot of inflation, and it'll end up in a bust. Probably 2-3 years from now, we'll move into deflation, maybe a little bit longer. It all depends on how long they can keep the game going.
Well, could they just leave it in inflation, destroy the value of our currency, and then move to a different type of currency? Is that a possibility?
Might have a revolution in their hands, too.
Okay, what they're talking about is a global currency, the Foreign Affairs magazine, the official publication of America's Invisible Government, talking about a global currency, and certainly, you're not going to be able to have a world government unless you have a world currency. Is it possible they want to destroy our currency? What would the American people do? That just say, well, it's all the sum of Bin Laden's fault, and we're just going to have to go along. See, wouldn't it be great to get back to a stable currency again?
Well, first of all, the public, half of them are illiterate and have their heads in the sand, and probably a little bit more than half of them. And so they're never going to partake. They're going to become total victims. And you're talking about another currency. Because of what has transpired in the Middle East, Mr. Z. Big Brzezinski says that the plan for world government has been put back 30 years by the incompetence of the current U.S. administration. And I believe him. And I don't believe they'll go to another currency soon. I think that in trying to set up a North American Union, they'll be unsuccessful. What I do think that they'll do is, in all probability, go bankrupt. And that is, they'll do what the British did in the 1930s, and they'll say all the dollar bills of one denomination or another, U.S. currency, it's outside the United States, will no longer be redeemed by the United States government. So they'll effectively neutralize the value of that money stock, of which about 70% is in the hands of foreigners.
Well, it's in the hands of the central bankers, and don't you think the central bankers are aware of this possibility? Isn't that why they're sending up their sovereign wealth funds to come into America to dump their dollars as rapidly as they can, buying up our infrastructure, buying up our factories, buying up our manufacturing, you know, because they don't want to lose the value of the currency that they're holding, American currency?
Yes, that's true. And most of the entities that are doing that are entities that are working closely with the Illuminati. Now, the other people are going to get stuck because at least they've got some property and equipment and whatever. And the rest of the people will have currency that's worth 30 to 50% less than it is now and maybe worth nothing at all. And so I think this is where this is headed. And if they go to another currency, and they don't have world government in place, they'll be forced to go through the whole thing over again. And I don't think they'll go for a regional or world currency because I don't think they're prepared for it.
Well, certainly the Chinese, apparently this last week, had threatened the nuclear option, not speaking of nuclear bombs, but beginning to dump the American dollar. And certainly Ambrose Evans Pritchard, who's one of my favorite international writers, I think he writes for the Sunday Tribune over there in London, had a chance to interview him a number of times when he was the Washington correspondent, and he seems to be convinced that we're on the verge of a financial collapse, and talking about the Chinese openly talking about the nuclear option of simply dumping dollars, you know, to bring down our currency if we try to force them to raise the value of the yuan. What's your thought on that?
Well, first of all, if they raise the value of the yuan, the Chinese are right in that they won't have to buy dollars anymore and they'll definitely be dollar sellers. They were pointing toward, in this argument, the possibility that Congress might impose a 27.5% tariff on Chinese goods. That's in the works. And the chances of it getting passed are very good. I think Congress is a little short-sighted. I think they should set out formulas. I'll repeat that in a minute. What they should do is include all the nations and then set up formulas as to where their currency should be, because almost every country in the world is devaluing their currency so they can compete with one another, and they're dumping everything that they have, that they manufacture in the United States. And so that has to be done, and it probably will be done, maybe not including all the other countries, but at least the Chinese. The Chinese know it's coming.
Well, I think the Chinese are really very, very clever people, and the last thing they want to get stuck with a $1.3 trillion of reserves, probably, what, $800 or $900 billion of that is in American dollars. And, of course, they start dumping that here in the United States, and the total money in circulation is probably now more than $700 billion. You'd double the amount of money in circulation. That would have a disastrous inflationary effect on us, wouldn't it?
It would make Chinese goods more expensive in the United States. And they're already becoming more expensive because the yuan has moved up somewhat.
Hold that right there. All right, Bob, you were just saying that the Chinese products are becoming more expensive in the United States because the yuan has moved up, I think, 4.5%.
Gold and silver is tremendously undervalued. Global demand vastly exceeds mined supply by more than 60% annually. There is little in the financial world more certain than a coming explosion in the prices of gold and silver. The U.S. dollar continues to lose value and respect as the world's reserve currency. Our nation faces challenges on many fronts, and a day doesn't pass without another economist bringing forth warnings of impending economic calamity. There has never been a better time than right now to acquire physical gold and silver. Discount Gold and Silver Trading was founded on the principles of truth and honesty. We believe in providing a quality product, quality service, and most importantly, competitive pricing. We provide all forms of precious metals, including American gold, silver, platinum, and rare investment and circulated coins. Silver bars, rounds, and 90% silver bags are on hand for the silver investor. Gold self-directed IRAs are available. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. Toll free, that's 1-800-375-4188.
Most Americans are iodine deficient today because they stopped adding iodine to our milk and to our flour, and only about half of the salt that's consumed in the United States today contains iodine. So Radio Liberty has produced a four-tape or a four-CD set that discusses the health benefits of iodine. We also offer Iodorol. It contains 12.5 milligrams of iodine per tablet. And we also offer potassium iodide tablets that'll protect your thyroid gland in case there's a nuclear attack. So if you'd like to order these products or obtain additional information, why don't you call 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. Or go to our website at RadioLiberty.com. That's RadioLiberty.com. Once again, our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927.
You got headaches? Most headaches are caused by a structural weakness of blood vessels in the head, and the blood vessels are tending to balloon, causing a headache. The structural weakness is due to a deficiency. Correct the deficiency and the body will heal itself. I blended what I believed to be the missing nutrients in the right proportions, and the headaches went away. When they were gone, they stayed gone. I named it Headache Stay Gone. See HeadacheStayGone.com or call 800-327-0727 for more information or to place an order. I'll send you a bottle of Headache Stay Gone. Headache Stay Gone will cure your headaches and prevent them from coming back before you pay the bill. Headache Stay Gone has already cured the worst migraines I have ever heard of. Call 800-327-0727. All orders are shipped the same day. Call 800-327-0727. That's 800-327-0727.
Hi, this is Dr. Tony Teary. Are you one of the many people who take vitamin supplements? Do you take handfuls of pills each day to increase energy, reduce your pain, or improve your overall health? Now there is a better way to get the vitamins and minerals your body needs in a delicious-tasting whole food liquid supplement, Body Balance. Body Balance contains 121 essential vitamins and minerals and is made from only organic and natural sources. Developed by doctors, Body Balance was originally available only through healthcare professionals. Now this incredible whole food liquid supplement can be delivered directly to your home. Body Balance offers an extremely effective method to feed your body towards wellness, and we're confident you'll love the difference your body feels. To order your Body Balance, call me directly at 1-800-768-9763 and try it risk-free for 45 days. Again, that's 1-800-768-9763 or online at healthyfoundations.net.
Oil, but some of the other major oil producers began accepting other currencies as to purchase oil with, the dollar would lose its reserve status, and that would mark the death knell for the dollar. What would it mean to the average listener out there if the dollar suddenly should lose its reserve status and no longer be so highly valued by other countries?
Well, the first thing would be goods coming into the United States would increase in cost by 30%. And at the same time, that would export inflation into the United States from all those other countries that we've been exporting it to previously. And so it's kind of a double whammy. I mean, we'll already have inflation of some 15% or higher, and then you're going to get that laid on top of it, and that means that you're going to start having major unemployment. You're certainly going to be in a very difficult recession, and if it continues for any length of time, the demand for money and credit will decrease, and the result will be that there'll be a depression. And once the dollar starts deflating, all currencies will. And the only thing that'll be worth anything is gold. And that's the ultimate money. And so that's the way I see things going. First the hyperinflation, then the deflation, and then the loss of assets, the value of the loss of assets of 60 to 90%, with the exception of gold. And I think that's where we're headed.
In other words, you're talking about people losing 60 to 90% of the value of their certainly of their property holdings, and what?
Yeah,
about
property, cars.
What about the stock?
No, anything.
What about the stock market? What's going to happen to the stock market?
It's going to go down, irrespective of what they try to do to stop it. It'll go down about 20%. Which you take it down, somewhere down between 11,300 and 12,000 on the Dow soon, probably by the end of the year. And I believe it'll drop from there to 10,300, to 8,800 to 9,500, and then to 7,286 where it was in 2001. And I don't think that that's the bottom. I don't dare go any further, because that is a 50% reduction in the value of securities. And so, and securities will be included with all those other assets that will go down. And that means that pension and profit sharing plans won't be able to make the payouts that they planned on making, etc. And we'll probably have unemployment. And unemployment today, I believe, is over 13%. It has been for some time. I think it will move up into the 30s, 30 to 35%. I mean, just look back here at the last 6 years, and just an increase in wages. At best, wages have gone up maybe 5 or 6%. But you've had 10% increase inflation each year. And so you've lost probably 40 to 50% of your purchasing power of the dollar. And that's going to continue.
All right. Well, Chris, the outlook really is rather grim. And I don't think most people have any idea of the seriousness of the economic situation we're in. President Bush keeps insisting everything is just fine. And Trustee Ben Bernanke, chairman of the Central Bank, tells us everything's fine. And of course, to ensure that things don't fall apart, he dumped, what was it, $30 billion into the market yesterday or today? Something like
well,
that.
Well, my guess is that over the last week alone, they probably have dropped $500 billion
really?
Into the markets.
Well, they haven't told us
easy,
the whole story.
Easy. And in fact, they may be even over a trillion. We don't know.
You're talking about just the United States, or does that take into account Europe and some of the other countries as well? Bob?
Yes.
Is that the United States, or is that in combination with our good friends over in Europe and the rest of the world?
That's a combination.
A combination, okay.
But, you know, this didn't just start this week. This has been going on for weeks. And so goodness knows how much they've injected.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Well, Bob, certainly we were all surprised to hear about this French bank closing down because they were uncertain about the value of their reserves. But have other banks gotten into similar problems over in Europe?
Well, yes, and that's why the European Central Bank and the Fed did what they did in creating money and credit in order to bail the situation out. Now, the problem is it's too late. No matter what they do, they're not going to be able to control this. And I've been saying that for a long time. Unfortunately, everything that I've had to say, and you know this because I've been on your program so frequently, you know that everything I've had to say has come true. And we're headed for serious trouble. And there's no way back.
What's going to happen?
That's why I do as many radio programs as I do. I'm losing my voice today because this is program number 4.
Well, Bob, what's happening, as far as the commodities are concerned? Certainly the price of a copper, $3.50. I can remember when it was at $3 back in the 1960s. In other words, and then a dollar was worth about 3 or 4 times what it's worth today. So really at $3.50, that's not very high for copper. And now, do you think that commodities, copper, nickel, tin, aluminum, all of these, and gold and silver, are these all going to go up, or what's going to happen as we move into this inflationary spiral?
Well, as long as we're in inflation, you're going to see base metals move up with precious metals, because it will be a place to put assets as opposed to bonds and stocks. If you're a professional or have a professionally managed currency account, it's a place to be if you want to be, but that's not suitable for everybody. So really, commodities and precious metals during inflation are the only place to go to. And of course, when inflation ends, everything goes into gold bullion or bullion coins. And then you take the ride down with everybody else. Only everybody else will go down 60 to 90%. You'll only go down 20. And you'll have something that's spendable. And nobody else or very few other people will.
All right, what's going to happen to silver now? We've talked about it in the past. It certainly hasn't been doing much of anything for 6 months or so.
You're right. And
hold that thought for just a moment. Sure. We'll bring other stations on board. Well, this is Dr. Stan. I guess this evening, Bob Chapman, who is, of course, the editor of the International Forecaster that comes out twice a week now, and certainly I always look forward to that and read it religiously. And Bob, how can people get in touch with you and get more information on the International Forecaster?
Well, the forecast is about business, finance, economics, and social and political issues all over the world. And we publish twice a week by email, usually 25 or 30 pages each time. And we have a hard copy that goes out twice a month. You can get an introductory copy by going to our site on the internet, and that address is theinternationalforecaster.com. The International FOrecaster.com. Or you can call toll free 800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188.
All right, fine. Now, if you're out there in the listening audience, you have a question for Bob, don't hesitate to call us at 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295, and it is my opinion, and I know that Bob feels the same way, that they are manipulating the price of gold and silver. Who are they? They are the central banks of the world, the people who control the economies of the countries of the world, and of course they are held secret meetings. Their plan is they want to rule the world in a feudalistic manner. At least that's what Professor Quigley says on page, I think, 324 of his book, Tragedy and Hope, A History of the World in Our Time. Under any circumstances, they certainly have been manipulating gold and silver down, but what is going to happen? Why would they ever lose control? They have such good control today. Is there anybody else in the world who will really step in and start buying up gold and silver, which are in relatively short supply, and the only reason they can manipulate the prices down is because they just simply keep shorting and shorting and shorting? But if anybody were actually to actually take delivery on their long contracts, why, the whole system would fall apart. But is there anybody who would dare to start accumulating gold and silver on a large scale, as the Hunt brothers did back in 1980?
Well, I think the Arab nations are capable, as is Russia and China and even Venezuela. So were they to act in unison, and of course Iran has been a gold buyer in order to get out of dollars, which is probably a blessing. And so there is another faction or groups of people who could easily convert their dollars into gold, and that would cause a run on gold to the upside, but also on the dollar to the downside. And so the situation could be extremely explosive.
Well, but the question is, it could be. Do you think it will be, or do you think we're just going to have to wait and see?
I think it's a lead pipe cinch. I think it's just as simple as that. They went beyond the median point in 2001, and they can't go back. And all of the things that they put in motion in order to go ahead with their world government, which now is not 4 or 5 years ago, but away, but 25 or 30 years away, and they can't stop what's in process economically and financially. And so they're stuck with having to combat that, and that's why they don't want the system to go down now, even though they planned it that way. Because if the system goes down, everybody's going to find out what they did. And that's going to blow their plans up completely. And they could start setting a timetable 100 years from now. Because they just aced themselves out. And that's the way I think it's going to unfold.
All right, well now if the Chinese products increase in value, wouldn't that help certainly our products? Certainly wouldn't our products become far more competitive if the price of Chinese products went up?
Yes, unfortunately, we don't produce very much anymore. And so the devaluation of the dollar is not an important event as it would have been 25 years ago. The only way that we can do that is probably to put our house in order and by imposing tariffs. Tariffs are a major key to solving the American problem, because if you have tariffs on goods from every nation that has underpriced goods, they're not on a par purchase-wise, then you have to make them that way. And in that way, it will force manufacturers who left the United States to return. Not only manufacturers, but also creators of services. And those creators of services are companies like IBM.
Well, I certainly agree with you, Bob, but the problem is that certainly I don't think that the Congress will be allowed to, restore tariffs on products. I think the globalists certainly don't want that. I think the globalists want to really impoverish our people, and they're doing a pretty good job of it. I think the average wage for so many people is going down. The the pension security and even the health care that that they've been promised is just disappearing like yesterday's sunset. And unless we had a Congress who would really put America first, and they don't. I mean, most of these people, many of them are globalists, and unless there's a tremendous outcry from the American people, as there was with the amnesty bill, they're going to continue pushing globalism step by step by step, because certainly the elitists, I don't think, really want to preserve the industrial base of the United States. Do you think they want to preserve our industrial base?
Not at all, but, you know, there's another factor here. And that is, if they don't do something, and they get found out, and they're getting found out, of what they have been and are doing and intend to do, they're in serious trouble. I mean, you can have impeachment. You can have Congress cleared of all of the people who have been covering this up. You might get lucky and get Ron Paul as the president. We would do away with the Federal Reserve and the Internal Revenue Service. Just for starters, and these people would be exposed, and they can't be allow themselves to be exposed to the light of day, because the minute they are, the whole game is over.
Sort of like a vampire.
And I think that's what's going to happen.
Like a vampire, you know, they at the first rays of dawn, they've got to flee for the darkness, and that's exactly what these people are. They're vampires. They've sucked the very lifeblood out of our country. They work through these secret societies. They are the leaders of the CFR and banking and foundations, and certainly they have their people in our military, so that there will be no effort to disrupt their plans. The one thing they fear is the military and the police force and the patriots of this country would, of course, accuse them of being what they truly are. They are traitors. They are people whose loyalty is not to the United States, but to this international dream of the New World Order, the New World Religion. Our telephone number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. If you have a question for Bob Chapman, who certainly knows a great deal more about this than most people. He's been following it for how long now? Over 40, almost 50 years, haven't you been at it?
Yeah, 48 years.
All right, fine. Well, of course, certainly this was an exciting week with the breaking of the market as dramatically as it was. And then when did they actually start to correct the market today, do you recall?
Well, they started from the get-go. The Dow futures at 3:30 this morning were down over 100 points, and the market opened up down about 155, and they struggled to get it back to close to even during the entire day, and so they spent a lot of money doing that, and they're going to have to do it every day because the confidence is gone, and I don't think they can hold the market up. And I think it's going to go down, and I think gold's going to go up. And, you know, as far as gold's concerned, they're going to run out of gold. I mean, they can't keep on selling the way that they are. I mean, they've got to run out. They have a finite amount.
Well, it's going to be very interesting to actually see what happens. And, certainly, but most of these large gold sales, they're really not selling to somebody else, aren't they? Mostly just transferring it back and forth between one central bank and the other. I mean, how many people are going to buy 100 tons of gold? I mean, obviously these are insider sales to drive the price of stocks down.
Well, some of the sales are the larger ones, and they're being bought by the people who are selling, essentially. But an awful lot is being taken off that they never expected by India and the Middle East and China. You have colossal increases in the amount of gold being taken down by those regions of the world where gold historically has been a store of wealth and has a religious significance as well. And they never counted on that. They never thought that there would be that kind of physical offtake. And, you know, every time gold goes down, the buyers are there. I mean, they take it out. And they take it out big time. And, you know, we're cycling again into, in India, the Hindu Festival of Lights, which is called Diwali. And that's a big gold buying season, which starts next month, I think. And then there's another holiday about a month or so after that. And there's a lot of gold buying for gifts and things like that. And so I think before the end of the year, and maybe much sooner, we'll see 850 on gold, and we might see 1,000. And once it's broken out, there's no top on it.
What do you
it
think,
could go anywhere.
What do you think that will happen to silver? Do you think it'll go to, what, 15 or 20? Or does it have a potential to go higher?
Well, I think if gold goes to 850, silver can go to $25. And if gold goes to 1,000, I think it could move up into the $35-$50 area. And I think gold, just to reflect inflation, right now should be selling over $2,000 an ounce. If that happens, then I think silver could sell at $100 an ounce.
All right, fine. Well, of course, somebody had called in and wanted to know what type of stocks does the fund protection team, I think they're talking about the plunge protection team, choose in order to rig the market. Don't they really, of course, go after most of the stocks in the Dow Jones just so that'll look good? And then they hope, of course, that, or do they go after all the stocks?
No, they go after the indexes, which is the index on the Dow and on the S&P and on NASDAQ, and they take them up in uniformity usually, and that's what they go after. They don't buy individual stocks, and if they do, it's usually in conjunction with one of the large brokerage houses like J.P. Morgan Chase, and Citigroup, Goldman Sachs, and some of the other big banks. There's 21 agents that both the Treasury and the Federal Reserve use to execute the rigging of the market, and those firms are involved, and they know exactly what's going on, and of course they have inside information, and they act on it for themselves. And that's why they make so much money.
Well, what does Richard Russell say? Certainly he's been around for a long time. I can remember when I first got started 45 years ago, he was an old man. At least we thought he was an old man. And he's still going strong. What is his take on this? Do I have a chance to see what he's saying?
Right, yeah, I do. And Richard Russell is more a chartist than anything else. He believes in the Dow theory, and I don't think it works anymore. And he did have a few very good picks, but as of late, he hasn't done anything important. He has a large following. I don't think he's done that well over time to deserve that large following. I think his letter is run-of-the-mill, so to speak. He, from time to time, has recommended gold and gold shares, but he's certainly not a gold bug. Never has been. And he's along for the ride. And so I don't pay much attention to what he says.
All right, fine. Well, of course, I think that a lot of people see what's happening and realize that this cannot go on forever. And the reason it can't is because there's nothing behind our currency. We have a fiat money system. Throughout all history, fiat money systems collapsed. They collapsed in ancient Greece. They collapsed in the Roman Republic. They collapsed in the Roman Empire. And Diocletian in 300 A.D., was slapping on wage and price controls to try to control runaway inflation, just like Mugabe, President Mugabe of Zimbabwe is trying to do over there in Zimbabwe today. And, of course, irresponsible financial manipulation, as we see in Zimbabwe, where, of course, the rate of inflation is 10,000% a year. 10,000, that's the official rate. It's pretty much higher than that. Well, Bob, do you have any parting thoughts for our listeners tonight?
Again, stay as far out of debt as you can. Get gold and silver-related assets. Unless you get an awful lot of money, I think that's the limit of what you can do. You might get some food put away and access to water, have some weapons, and I think things could get difficult.
All right, fine. Hang on. We'll be back in just a moment to wrap up this evening's program. Well, Bob, you've got 3 minutes to wrap up tonight's program.
Well, let's do projections here. Seeing what they've done and all the gold that they sold in the last 2 months, they've sold over 200 tons. And they still haven't been able to knock gold down again. It's held its own. And that's pretty strong. So I think we're in for a good crack here before the end of the year at 850 or higher. And I don't think 700 will be any kind of a formidable barrier. And silver will trail along. And the stock market, I think it's going down. They're looking for a decrease in interest rates. I think it would be suicidal. But what it would do is send gold right into orbit along with silver, because it would mean even more inflation than we're anticipating. And so that's the format on that side. On the other side, even lower interest rates isn't going to save the stock market. It's way overpriced. The increase in earnings are falling. Again, this year, so far, I've been right on, and the experts have been wrong again. They look for 13.5% increase in earnings. I said 4-8%. In the first half of the year, it was 6%. Maybe as much as 7. And I think the second half of the year is going to be going to be as difficult. And so I think that we're in for investment problems, economic problems, financial problems, and again, you got to get your house in order.
Well, I certainly agree with you. I think these are going to be the most exciting, difficult, dangerous, frightening, and yet maybe in many respects the most gratifying, because unless things get a lot worse, the American people are not going to become aware. As long as they're fat, dumb, and happy, they're not going to be concerned. It's only when their ox is gored, when their job is gone, when their savings and their pensions and certainly are gone, that people are going to sit up and take notice and begin remembering what's really important in this world. And it's not necessarily money at all. We'd like to have security, but certainly a stable government, a government that believes in individual freedom and putting an end to these senseless wars. Bob, thanks very much for being with us again.
Okay, Stan, I'll see you again soon.
Right.
Bye-bye.
Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Bob Chapman, and Bob sounds tired tonight, but he's been doing radio programs all day long. He said this is his fourth program, and of course this is my sixth program, but I get no, this is only my fifth program. I still have one more to go. Under any circumstances, why, what a privilege it is to be able to talk to people all over the world. Now, I believe that we're seeing a situation developing that is going to lead to severe financial problems in this country and worldwide. And our plea to you is, if you really care about yourself and your family, understand the spiritual implications of what's going on. Let me suggest my talk, the financial tsunami. And, of course, that comes with a syllabus. If you wanted to, don't have to get the syllabus, but it would explain all of these terms to you, and it give you a good overview of what they're doing. There is a plan, and I believe that plan is to destroy the economic security of our nation. If you have not yet read the Earth Charter, this is the master plan for what they intend. It's written by three of the most wealthy and powerful men in the world. It's available up on the internet. Just type in Earth Charter, Google in Earth Charter. But if you can't do that, we'll be glad to send you one free of charge. And one of the things that they suggest in point 10A is the equitable distribution of wealth within nations and between nations. And within nations, of course, they're talking about impoverishing the people, take away from destroying the middle class. That would be the equitable distribution of wealth. And then between nations, of course, destroying the financial stability of our nation, transferring our jobs, transferring our manufacturing overseas. It's all part of the master plan. It's the Earth Charter. So you'll be glad to send you a copy free of the Earth Charter if you want it. We hope many of you want to get the Financial Tsunami Talk, available on VHS or DVD, and the syllabus that goes with that. We have a little pamphlet we put together. I think it has about five newsletters in it called The History of Money, and we think it's excellent. We think that for those of you who really want to understand what's going on in the book, The Creature from Jekyll Island by our good friend Ed Griffin, the book The Federal Reserve Conspiracy, because the Federal Reserve is a privately owned central bank that controls our government. And, of course, both Alan Greenspan and Paul Volcker, the last two chairmen of the Fed, both just happened to come from David Rockefeller's Trilateral Commission. Gee, what a coincidence. And then, of course, another little book, which is so vitally important, it's entitled Fiat Money, Inflation in France. It's the story of what happened in France in 1789. And when you read that book, it's like deja vu all over again. And so that's The Creatures from Jekyll Island, The Federal Reserve Conspiracy, Fiat Money, Inflation in France, and, of course, my talk on The Financial Tsunami. And then, of course, we hope that you'll want to get my book or talk on the Brotherhood of Darkness, on the Forbidden Secret. This is a story which will help you to understand the spiritual forces which are directing the course of events today. And also, of course, it will help you to understand so much of what's going on. We'll introduce you to the other dimension, the spiritual dimension, which is directing our policies. Now, if you haven't read my pamphlets on the occult hierarchy, you go to Google in occult hierarchy, and you'll see articles written by people who are affiliated with it, or you can use the term intermittently, finally substitute the spiritual hierarchy. There is a spiritual hierarchy that directs the course of the world today. And, of course, these people come from the other dimension. So remember, all of these things are available at our website, RadioLiberty.com. Give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. We are at war today. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind. This is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at. Illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers, and of course we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295, but please hold your calls for the time being. We have this on the line, Ellen Gunderson Framer, who we haven't had on for some time, but we always enjoy having her. Ellen has a wonderful talent for writing Christian fiction, Christian books based upon the Bible, and we carry, I think, almost all of her books, whether it be on Noah or on Melchizedek, or certainly on John, or all the major characters of the Bible, Mary Magdalene. She's written a book on them, and we do carry those. They're available from Radio Liberty. She's written a wonderful, more or less modern-day series, sort of based upon an Indiana Jones-like character. Ellen, how are you doing tonight?
Great, it's good to talk to you again.
Well, what happened to our Indiana Jones-like series?
Well, I'm working on the third one. It's coming along. Meanwhile, I tend to get sidetracked and work on other things, too. In the meanwhile, Gabriel came out, and my son's book came out, and but I'm working on it.
Well, we've done interviews on Gabriel, but I thought maybe this evening, why we might talk about your book on Noah. Now, for a lot of our listeners, you say, well, why? What do you want to talk about the book on Noah? How long ago did you write that?
You know, I think that came out in 1985.
Right, of course.
23 years ago.
I mean, I think it's an important book because, you know, we're told in Matthew 24 when us and the disciples asked our Lord, when will we know what will be the signs of your coming? And one of the things he said was, as it was in the days of Noah. And so, certainly, you remember, of course, this was before the great flood, and there was a very, very advanced society there. It had done taken 300 or 400 years to develop this, and apparently there was tremendous knowledge, a very, very advanced society. And then came the great deluge that destroyed it, and there's some people think that maybe they were talking about lost Atlantis. We don't know, but we do know that there was a very advanced society, and God saw fit to destroy it.
Yeah.
Well, Dr. Stad and our guest, Ellen Gunderson Traylor, one thing is that Ellen does a tremendous amount of research and puts a lot of thought into it and prayer before she writes a book. So What is your interpretation of what the world was like before the Great Flood?
Well, geographically, scientists tell us that before the Great Cataclysm, is what they call the Great Flood, before that, there was a single mass of land on the planet, and they have a name for it. They call it Pangaea, which means all Earth or one Earth. And it was a single continent. And then we know that science and the Bible both coincide now in what they describe as happening to that continent. The Bible tells us that the fountains of the great deep were broken up and the windows of heaven were opened. And it rained 40 days and 40 nights. Science now says that the underground subterranean streams and geysers and so forth busted up through the continent, through the crust of the continent, and along the fault lines of the continent broke it all apart into the various continents that we know today. So their science is confirming what the scriptures have always said, that the fountains of the great deep were broken up. In other words, the subterranean magma, I have a hard time with that word, but M-A-G-M-A, the magma underneath the earth, came spewing up and actually busted the continent apart. At the same time, science tells us that there used to be a cloud canopy that covered the entire Earth, just like there is still over Uranus today, and that actually condensed and coagulated and crashed to the Earth. Before that happened, in the days before the flood, before the Great Cataclysm, the Earth was like a garden. A paradise, absolutely. And we see evidence of this today under the ice caps at the North and South Poles and so forth, that there was actually a jungle-like vegetation all over the earth.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back here in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest this evening is certainly one of our favorites. We haven't talked to Ellen for a long time, and so we wanted to have her on. If you have not read her books, they're all available at Radio Liberty, and you can give us a call or certainly go to our website, or we'll be glad to send you a catalog, and all of the books are listed there. But tonight we're talking about her book on Noah. And, of course, she was just saying that the scientists seem to agree with the Bible that before the great cataclysm, which they refer to as the flood, the earth was not broken up into continents. It was one great continent. Of course, there was a canopy over the earth. It didn't rain. Everything was very lush and green, and so probably this is where a great deal of our coal came from, matted down, because things grew and grew very, very rapidly at that time. There was a lush undergrowth, and it is probably from there that the great coal deposits that we see came from. And then, of course, there was this cataclysmic event and the explosions as the waters came from the deep and magma came from the deep and broke the continents apart, and you pick up the story there.
Okay. Well, at the same time, the windows of heaven were opened, the Bible says, which science describes as the canopy condensing and crashing to the earth, which would be what was going on with the rain, the tremendous amount of liquid falling to the earth. And it would have taken many days, for all of that water to actually fall to the earth. We can't even begin to imagine what that was like. The Bible says 40 days and 40 nights. It's possible, and I am a literalist with the scriptures, but there are also phrases that are sometimes meant to say something, not necessarily to be taken in perfect terms, but that the point being that 40 days and 40 nights represented an enormous amount of time. This event took, you know, undoubtedly well over a month for all of that moisture to come down to the ground. So then we have continental drift. See, even though the geysers and the magma came spewing up volcanic action all over the continent, that didn't mean that those all of the new continents were immediately thrust apart like they are today on the globe. It would have taken centuries and centuries and millennia of time for those continents to drift apart to the point that they are today. And we know that those continents are still drifting. They have not ever stopped moving. It's just so infinitesimal that we don't recognize it happening, but science tells us today that they're able to measure this, and there is still continental drift going on. You mentioned the story of Atlantis, and Atlantis could very well be kind of a derived legend, a legend that grew out of the story of the Great Flood, just another way of telling it that people comprehended. But the word Atlantis, Dr. Stan, if you trace it back etymologically, actually means the land of Adam. It comes from a word, Adamlanda, which it's a corruption of the idea in the language of the land of Adam. So isn't that interesting?
Yes, it really is.
So the whole story of Atlantis, the continent that sunk into the ocean, that was a way of telling the same story, the Greeks and the Romans' version of the same story. And we know that the flood story is universal. Every culture all over the world has its own version of the flood story.
And of course, the writings about Atlantis clearly come from Plato, from his dialogues, where he described this ancient and wonderful society. He thought it was wonderful, of course.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly, if it is a society that was there at the time of Noah, God had a different opinion of it. But,
right.
But anyway, of course, it was supposedly a very advanced society.
Right.
And there is this desire on the part of certain people within the occult realm, who, of course, go right along with Plato's views, to reconstitute what was at once lost Atlantis, this society that God destroyed. Now, why did God want to destroy the world where Noah lived? That's the question.
Well, you know, interestingly, most of the flood stories from around the world that talk about the time before the flood and what the world was like talk about gods or supernatural beings actually cohabitating side by side with human beings. Well, if you look at the scriptures, there are hints there to the same effect, that there were supernatural beings actually living on the earth at that time and mingling with the people. In Deuteronomy chapter 32, in the Revised Standard Version, it reads this way: "Remember the days of old when the Most High gave to the nations their inheritance, when he separated the sons of men. He fixed the bounds of the peoples according to the number of the sons of God." Now, the term sons of God can be taken in different ways in the scripture. Sometimes it's referring to the angels. Sometimes it's referring to righteous human beings. And sometimes it's even referring to fallen angels. In Genesis chapter 6, it says, and this is the King James Version, "And it came to pass when men began to multiply on the face of the earth, and daughters were born unto them, that the sons of God saw the daughters of men that they were fair, and they took them wives of all which they chose." Okay, well, again, that could mean human beings. It could mean angels. It could mean fallen angels. But let's look a little further now. Also in the same chapter, Genesis chapter 6, and this is the Revised Standard Version, the Nephilim, or the fallen ones, or the giants, there are different interpretations for that word, but it does mean the fallen ones, literally, were on the earth in those days, and also afterward, when the sons of God came into the daughters of men, and they bore children to them. These, the ones that they bore to them, the offspring, were the mighty men that were of old, the men of renown. When you look at the story of Noah and what was going on the earth in those days, to interpret this as being that the righteous men took the daughters of other men and married them, and thereby there were great people born to them, really does not make a lot of sense. This is one interpretation of those verses, but the only thing that really seems to make sense when you look at the whole story of Noah and what was the way the earth is described in those days and the great wickedness that was on it, you'll notice that nobody was spared except Noah and his three sons and their wives. So to interpret this as being that the righteous men of the earth married these women and had powerful offspring, it makes no sense. There were no righteous men. There were none. So who are they talking about? Who is Moses talking about in these passages? He's talking about fallen angels. Now, when I first came across this idea, it wasn't in some weird wacko website somewhere. It wasn't in some strange occult literature. It was Merrill F. Unger, one of the most conservative commentators in the Christian world. It was Albright, another highly renowned scholar in the Christian world. We had some of the greatest Christian minds saying, what this is talking about here is fallen angels. So I was, frankly, Dr. Stan, I was very surprised. I was not expecting, when I was assigned the task to write a book on Noah, which is what Tyndale House Publishers asked me to do, I did not know what I would be coming across. I had heard the idea of giants in the earth, and I'd heard them talked about as dinosaurs, everything from dinosaurs to mighty men of God. I mean, I had no idea. And yet when I looked at what these other scholars were saying and then put that together with all of the legends from all over the world about what was going on in the pre-flood world, it all came together and made sense to me, because all of the corroborating evidence from all tradition, all legend, all mythology all around the world is that there were indeed godlike creatures, or what we would call fallen angels, living and walking among humanity at that time. The earth, the world, had become so corrupted by the evil of these creatures that we cannot even begin to comprehend how terribly evil it was.
And I really think, of course, that is part of the message that we're hoping to get out tonight, to get people to think how corrupt and evil the world is today,
yes,
as it was in the days of Noah. But certainly, as you, those of you who listen to our programs, you will hear that stories from people who even in these modern days have seen giants, or have talked to people who have seen giants. And where do these beings come from? They're not of this earth. They're obviously of another dimension. And when Christ said, you know, it will be as it was in the days of Noah, I think it's so important we know what was going on in the days of Noah.
Right.
Well, Ellen, go ahead, pick the story up from there.
Well, I would like to just share some phrases from other traditions, other legends and religions and mythologies and so forth that talk about these beings. Very interesting terminology that's applied to these creatures. Angels of light, angels of Lucifer, beings with a capital B, daemons, D-A-E-M-O-N-S, which is an old form of the word demons, fallen ones, gods, governors, great ones, lords, masters, Olympians, overseers, princes, rulers of darkness, sons of God, and watchers. Those are the terms applied to these beings that the Bible calls the sons of God. Now, their offspring, which the Bible calls the Nephilim, go by the following terms in these traditions. Again, beings, fallen ones, giants, heroes, meteors, titans, and the Bible calls them mighty men of old, men of renown. See, when Moses talked about this, he didn't go into much detail because the people of his day knew exactly what he was talking about. Like he says, these were the mighty men of old, the men of renown. In other words, these are the ones you've all heard about. These are the ones you've all talked about and been told about all your lives. In our Western culture, in our scientific world and so forth, we don't learn about those things. We're not raised being taught these things. Moses, the people of Moses' time, the Egyptians, the Canaanites, the Israelites, the people of that day and age, the Babylonians, the Sumerians, people from all over the world at that time, and later the Greeks and Romans, there was no mystery about this for them. They knew what was being spoken of here. For us, it's very sketchy and vague, and we have to do a lot of research to come up with these identifications of these beings. For these people, they knew exactly who Moses was talking about. It was no mystery. Also, the pagans of those days worshipped the sun, S-U-N, the sun, and the sun went by many names: angel of light, golden orb, great governor of the skies, light bearer, master of the air, mentor of the overseers, in other words, in charge of the fallen angels, orb of wisdom, oversoul, prince of the power of the air, prince of this world, the serpent, son of morning, spirit of the air, and universal spirit. Now, a lot of those phrases probably sound quite familiar, don't they? Because they're from the New Age.
And so what you're suggesting is the New Age has picked up these terms from the Old Age.
Yes. There's nothing new about them.
What was it? There's nothing new under the sun. I really believe that. I think it was the Solomon who said that, but it's absolutely true. We just have to understand what was here before. We'll be right back.
Okay.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Eldon was just been giving us some of the terms that have been applied to the beings who were here that time, and comments that the names that were given to them in ages past are very similar to the names that are given to these beings that the New Agers talk about, these spiritual beings that communicate today with the other dimension. And so Ellen is pointing out the similarities between the myths, the stories that were told, you know, thousands of years ago about the time as it was in the days of Noah.
Yes.
And the things that are going on today. So you pick the story up from there.
Okay. Well, another thing that very likely was going on, and now here's where we get into speculation, but I think it's well-founded, is that one of the reasons that God destroyed the human beings and the demons who were on the earth at that time was that they were tampering with the very stuff of life. In other words, the very foundation of the species that God had created and put on the earth and brought to Adam in the Garden of Eden, the very genetics of these creatures were being tampered with. And in order to save his original creation, God had Noah gather 2 and 7 of each kind, meaning of each species, from across the earth. They came to him, and he put them on an ark and literally saved creation as God had originally created the animals. Why was that necessary? It was necessary because, and here's again speculation, but I think it's well-founded, when you look at the legends of creatures from that period and even later that were worshipped by the pagan world, many of them are strange creatures, half this and half that, the mermaids, the minotaurs, the fauns, F-A-U-N, you know, half goat, half man, half this, half that. And what these very likely were, Dr. Stan, was genetically contrived creatures, these great beings with the great intelligence and the human beings collaborating together, working their science, which was very, very advanced at that time, far more advanced than what we have today. We're only beginning to scratch the surface on this. They were apparently actually messing with creation, messing with the animal life forms that God had originally created and brought to Adam in the garden. This explains why we have these legends that persist all across time and all down through history from every culture of peculiar beings. If you look at the gods of Egypt, for instance, many of them are hemibodies. The term hemibody, H-E-M-I, it's not talking about a four-wheel mountain-climbing rig, okay? It's talking about half-bodies, bodies of half this and half that. Many of the gods of Egypt were that. You've seen pictures of the man with the head of a raven, for instance, or the man with the head of a bull, okay? These were gods worshipped by the Egyptians. And throughout pagan societies, the gods are very often depicted as being very strangely constructed beings, part human, part animal, or part two different kinds of animal put together, and so, or some creature with many heads, or like Aphrodite with many breasts and so forth. These very well could be based on actual creatures that were made by the genetic industry before the flood.
Well, you know, really, that's so interesting because we know today they're doing all sorts of incredible things, and you know, they're trying to put, you know, human minds into mice and try to graft our genes into mice and animal genes into humans and take genes from one species or even from animals and put them into plants. And you know, as we see the similarities between, I mean, what happened in the days of Noah and what seems to be going on at the present time, and a lot of people think that this is, well, there's simply no similarity, and yet I think there's tremendous similarity.
Yes, there are.
I don't think that God is going to just sit around and allow it to happen. I really don't. We'll be back in just a moment here. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here. Our guest is Ellen Gunderson Traylor, and we're talking about the, as it was in the days of Noah, and certainly there were these beings, these not human beings, but probably the fallen angels, the certainly are demons, they were mating with women. And why I really think this is so fascinating is if you read some of the stories that we get from people who studied UFOs, and some of these are very, very scientific analyses. And there have been over 5,000 recorded abductions, and all of these abductions have something very similar. They have to do with these alien beings studying and collecting the reproductive material from both men and women, their women's eggs, men's sperm, and as if they are obsessed with this idea of creating some new life form. So have you run into this at all, Ellen?
Oh, certainly. That again, when Jesus talked about the latter days being as the days of Noah, he wasn't just talking about a flood or something. God promised he would never bring a flood like that again upon the earth. But he's talking about the morality, the immorality, the and all of the corruption of the day, which included the science and included tampering with life materials and so forth. Jesus didn't go into all of that when he made his statement. He didn't talk about all of that. But, you know, I think, again, those people were still close enough to the original information that they may not have needed as much as we do today either. Perhaps he didn't need to go into that much clarification with them. They had not lost as much of the memory of it all as we have. And, you know, we haven't just lost it. It has been obliterated by rationalism, by so-called science and so forth. And yet now science is coming around in its own way as it finds the truth, and it's actually confirming what the Bible has to say. What was going on in the days of Noah was much more than just a sinful humanity. There's been sinful humanity since.
Hold that thought for just a moment here. Well, this is Dr. Stan. I guess this is Ellen Gunderson Traylor. We were simply talking about the UFO phenomenon that we see today. And anybody who studies it will realize that these beings are real. I mean, we've talked to so many people who've either interviewed people or have actually seen these beings. And, of course, all of these beings, when they come here, seem to be interested in collecting genetic material, reproductive eggs from women and sperm from men. And there is an obsession with some form of creating a new form of life. This seems to be the purpose. And I really believe the UFOs are demonic beings. I believe that they are coming to Earth for a specific purpose. We're seeing so many more sightings today than ever before. And Chris Ellen is simply pointing out the similarities between what happened in the days of Noah and what's going on today, and pointing out that sometimes when Christ was talking to his disciples, they probably knew the stories of what had happened in the days of Noah, because remember, that would have been about 3,000 years before. But certainly at the present time, now we're 5,000 years divorced from that period, and we have not been schooled, and the tradition doesn't tell us what happened in those days. And so what we have to do today is try to conjecture from what we know from the Bible scriptures. So when God said, Christ said, as it was in the days of Noah, when asked when he would return, he did not necessarily have to elaborate on the details as much as we have to today. So you pick up the story there, Ellen. I think that's a very good point.
Well, and, you know, Jesus' brothers James and Jude, in their books, they refer to the dreadful sin that the demons committed. So it was common knowledge in those days that this had gone on in the pre-flood world. It was not something hidden from the people. When Jesus talked about the days of Noah, people knew what he was referring to, and one of the most glaring horrors of that day was this interaction between these demonic creatures and human beings in the form of intercourse bringing about strange children and so forth. Okay, so he didn't have to spell it out. They knew what he was talking about. So we have to open our minds to a broader possibility than we normally think of. When we think of the story of Noah, we're kind of conditioned to think of it as a cute children's story about a bunch of cute animals coming on a boat with a guy, you know? It's so much more than that. It has to do with the destruction of creation, destruction of the animal species that God had originally created, interaction in terribly immoral ways between demonic beings and human beings. The Bible talks about men and fallen angels and daughters of men. It could very well have been the other way around too, where human men were used in these ways. So anyway, yes, it was a grisly, horrible, disgusting thing that went on. It didn't just end with the physical act between these entities, though, Dr. Stan. They bore children from these acts. And the Bible describes these children as the Nephilim, which means the fallen ones. So they were some kind of hybrid being that apparently, you know, we don't know if they had a soul or if it meant they were cursed from the day they were born, if they were redeemable or not. I don't know. I don't know about that. That's a mystery there. They were called mighty men of old, men of renown. All we know is that the earth was so wicked and so filled with corruption, and the Nephilim are pointed at directly in there as though they are absolutely responsible for this. So we don't know, you know, at this point in our long history, we do not really know a lot about exactly what went on there, but we do have stories today of people who have been accosted this way. People, and you know, it's not just today either. These stories of this kind of behavior are all down through history. We have woodcuts, for instance, from the Middle Ages that show interaction like that with demons and women and so forth. I mean, we have stories going back hundreds of years. So it has happened repeatedly throughout history. It didn't stop with the time of Noah. In fact, I believe it's Joshua, in Joshua, where it talks about the beings who were on the earth before the flood and also after that. And I wish I could find that verse just right off. I'll be looking for it here. But it, in other words, it didn't stop with the time of Noah. It continued on afterwards.
All right, fine. Well, Sydney, in your story, which, of course, you have taken a certain amount of poetic license, but you have to have, you're going to write a whole book about the time of Noah, you have to take a little license. It's a fascinating adventure story, And, of course, you hypothesized that this was really a fairly advanced scientific society. Why, it was there any special reason why you felt that they would have had so much more in the way of a scientific ability at that time? Certainly, you know, of course, the construction of the Ark, and we know the dimensions of that Ark, that would have been a tremendous job. You'd have to have the ability to certainly to move those beams and all of the other things. Certainly, it would have been very, very difficult to have done that without a certain amount of technical equipment.
Well, you know, there have been some findings from the pre-flood strata on the Earth. Archaeologists have found strange things like spark plugs, gigantic spark plugs buried way down underneath the ground. Have you ever read von Däniken, Chariots of the Gods? He talks about all of these things that have been found from the pre-flood era in archaeology that point to a tremendously advanced society at that time. Why were they so advanced? Well, I'm sure there are a couple of different reasons at least. First of all, they had the input of these supernatural beings who taught them things and helped them out with these things. Plato talks about these beings in very favorable terms, you know.
Well, but then he was himself very much involved with the occult, so he.
Oh yes, right.
And this is what most people don't understand. They look upon him simply as a philosopher, where he was involved with the ancient mystery religions.
Well, certainly he was a Greek pagan, so he was not a Christian. He was pre-Christian, and he was not a Jew. But anyway, of course, he looks favorably on that, you know, on these beings and what he. But he describes them as teaching the Atlanteans everything they knew about agriculture, about government, about religion, about building, and everything. And so, yes, there was a very advanced society. Plus, people were closer to the time of Adam. Their physical bodies had not been corrupted as much by sin at that point, as far as deterioration. Their mental abilities were probably much keener than what we have today. Then they lived longer. I mean, if you had 500 or 600 years to learn things and to study things, you'd probably be creating all kinds of things, too, that you're not able to do in 75 or 80 years, right?
Right.
So, I mean, there are many reasons why people would have been more advanced in those days.
Well, I really think, of course, it was the knowledge that the demons brought, and the Nephilim brought, that allowed them to really do a lot of the things that they did at that time.
Absolutely.
And why they would have had that more advanced society.
Right. Right. But at the same time, a terribly corrupt one.
Right. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it would have to be terribly corrupt before God would, after all the work he'd done in creating humankind, that he would decide that the only thing he could do was to destroy it all, and starting over again with of course, Jonah, and by the way, with Noah and his descendants.
Right, right. Like I was beginning to say earlier, there have been sinful times all down through history. Humanity has always been sinful. We have terribly wicked cultures that have existed all down through history. God didn't wipe them all out every time, but something very unique was going on back then that required him starting over again. And I believe it wasn't just the immorality of the time, because if it were just the immorality, he would owe them an apology for not wiping out every immoral society. But it was more than that. It was that they had actually taken the stuff of creation that God had ordained, and they were messing with it. They were destroying it. They were perverting it to the point where it could have been irretrievably lost if they had been allowed to go on indefinitely with it. And this explains why such a great part of the Noah story is the adventure of the gathering of the animals. How God brought them, gave them an intuition and brought them from across the continent to this one man in this one little place with this strange boat he was building. Why did God go to that trouble? There's one reason, and that was that he was saving his creation as he had originally intended it.
And, of course, I think it's a wonderful thing to think, you know, the people who always said, well, how did Noah round up all those animals? Well, Noah didn't round them up.
No.
God rounded them up.
That's
and
right.
Brought them there for that purpose.
Right. And you'll notice he didn't bring two of, or seven of every kind of creature there was on the earth. He brought the species. He brought representatives of each species. So you had a couple of canine, a couple of feline. You didn't have to have every kind of feline. You didn't have to have a house cat and an African lion and a Montana cougar. And, you know, two felines is all you needed, two canines, two goats, a cow and a bull, and you know, this is all you needed. As far as dinosaurs, you know, all you really needed were a couple of little lizards. The ark could carry, it's been estimated that the ark was something like 47 boxcars in size, and that the number of species and the number of creatures that were required to save all of creation was about 300 creatures. Now, you've got plenty of room for the food, for exercise, for the family, for, you know, you have plenty of room on that ark for all of these animals that are necessary to represent the species. The fish, of course, are okay. They're going to be in the water. Couple of birds. We know he had a couple of birds. He, you know, he had a dove and he had a, what was the black bird he set out? The crow? Anyway, he had two birds. He had, you know, everything he needed was right there on the ark. It was plenty of room left over. Furthermore, we know that when animals are in a state of crisis, they will do one of two things. They will either hibernate or they will estivate, which means that their metabolism slows down incredibly. They're not moving much at all. 40 days and 40 nights of this or the equivalent is not that long a period of time for creatures to be in estivation or hibernation. If they were stirring around, there was plenty of room on the ark for them to exercise. I mean, I just think it's a phenomenal, very slick thing that God set up here.
Well, I mean, I think that he's a lot smarter than I am, unfortunately, and I think that it's an amazing story. And the trouble is that so disturbing is there's such similarities between the time of Noah and the time that we are facing today. And yet, on the other hand, certainly this is very gratifying because it is conceivable that we will, perhaps, if not during our lifetime, then shortly thereafter, see the Lord return to earth. So he will return, as it was in the days of Noah, when there were giants in the land, when there was corruption in the land, and of course, how this is going to come about, we may never know. Or we may actually witness some cataclysmic changes that will change society forever.
Mm-hmm. Yes. We don't know how much time we have.
Well, I'll tell you what, I want to tell for our listeners, though, that the book Ellen has written on Noah is well worthwhile. There's an adventure story. There's all sorts of plots within plots, as only Ellen Gundersen Traylor can weave. And we recommend this book to you. We've read it. We've read all of her books. And my wife has read them as well. And that's why we carry them for you. I mean, we've got a lot of books that will tell you how terrible everything in the world is. Well, these books are books that offer you hope and, of course, bring the message and the stories of the scriptures to life. And Ellen is a very talented author, and we'll be back in just a minute to wrap up the program. Ellen, do you have a web page you'd like people to go to?
I do, thank you. Yes, they can just go to ellentraylor.com. That's ellentraylor.com. They will see, well, it's a multifaceted website. It's rather complex, actually, because it covers not only all of my writing work and my publishing that I've done, but it shows my bookstore and shows how they can get books of all sorts from me. My specialty is rare books, so if they're interested in anything like that. You know, a number of your listeners have contacted me to find books for them, but hard to find books, and that's one thing that I do for people. So they might enjoy just surfing around on my site.
All right, well, certainly I've got books in the past, and Ellen's got them. Do you still have your bookstore that you had before?
I have recently, about a year ago, I moved my bookstore to Florence, Oregon. I was in Montana with my bookstore for 13 years, and I grew up in Oregon. My husband and I have a place in Oregon here and family down here and so forth, and so we're kind of a two-state family right now. We keep a foot in both states.
All right, fine. Well, we're going to certainly, as soon as we have all of our stations back on board, I'll want you once again to get that address out so people will know how to get in touch with you. And certainly the ability to track books down all over the world is important, at least it is as far as my research is concerned. And I'd far rather have somebody else do it. I just don't have the time.
Mm-hmm.
Well, anyway, would you have another new book before you finish up your trilogy on the Indiana Jones character?
You know, I don't. I'm writing two books right now. I'm writing the third one in that trilogy, and I'm also writing a nonfiction book right now, which I haven't settled on a name for yet, but. You know, it has to do with learning to live in the real dimension, as I call it. In other words, growing as a Christian so that you begin to sense the actual life of God all the time with you, not just now and then, not just in crisis situations, but on a day-to-day basis.
Hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment here. Well, this is Dr. Stan. I guess this evening has been Ellen Gundersen Traylor, and of course we've really enjoyed talking to her. Ellen has a bookstore, and actually you can buy books, Christian books, through her. We do carry all of her Christian books, but you can get them through her as well. And then, of course, she has a research facility. She'll track books down for you. Would you like to get your website out or any telephone number?
Sure. They can go to my website, ellentraylor.com, ellentraylor.com. And as I have been explaining, it's a rather complex site because it covers a lot of things, my own writings, my publishing company, and my bookstore. And one of the things I like to impress on your listeners is that we do find hard to find books for them. A number of your listeners have used that, and you have yourself used that service. I love doing that for people. It's very fulfilling for me. And so if you need something like that, or, hey, listen, even if you just want a brand new book that you've heard about, or some used book that you just don't want to take the time to track down for yourself, I can get those things to you, too. I can have brand new books by any author, any publisher sent direct to your home.
Well, God bless, and thank you so very much, Ellen. We'll look forward to talking to you again real soon.
Thank you very much. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. All right, fine. Certainly, Ellen is one of our favorite guests, and I hope we get her back again very soon. And if you have not heard her trilogy, or at least she's read the first two books, it goes into, well, it's a real Indiana Jones-type story. It's really very, very delightful. Well, this is the time when we need to remind our listeners that Radio Liberty is primarily listener-supported. And if you're out there in the listening audience and would like to give us a hand, our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927. Certainly, if you'd like to get Ellen's books, they're listed in our catalog or on our website at RadioLiberty.com. And I will tell you that they're wonderful reading, they're wonderful gifts, and they truly have a Christian message that will draw you and anyone you give them to closer to God. And then, of course, we do mention that this time, as we're seeing some very real financial problems in the land, that you probably would like to read, like to listen to my talk on the financial tsunami. And, of course, there's a syllabus goes with that. We have a pamphlet called The History of Money, which we think is important. We carry the book, Creature from Jekyll Island, another book called The Federal Reserve Conspiracy, a book called Fiat Money Inflation in France, which tells what happened in France in 1789 when they tried exactly what our government is doing today, to create prosperity by creating paper money. And of course what ultimately happened to the morality of that land and then to the freedom of the people. The book Fiat Money Inflation in France, and of course all of these items are available. You can learn more about them by calling 1-800-544-8927, 1-800-544-8927. If you're out across America and you're interested in setting up your own a full-power radio station, a new license is coming on board, and you give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. We'll get you information on that. I would like to have as many people out there across America having their own radio station so they can help us to inform the people about the spiritual battle that's taking place today. We hope many of you will want to get my talk on Forbidden Secret, the secret behind the secret, the secret mysteries of America's beginning, and the Brotherhood of Darkness. Our number again, 1-800-544-8927. Our webpage where you can listen to our programs, watch our videos, and read our letters, RadioLiberty.com.
You're tuned to the Global Star Radio Network. Thanks for listening.